New season, new films, and a brand new sound. Let battle commence.
The victory!
A dramatization of the disaster in April 2010, when the offshore drilling rig called Deepwater Horizon exploded, resulting in the worst oil spill in American history. We're back, baby! We're back! We're back, and we're back with a bang because our first theme of our Battle Royale season was disaster movies. So, joining me this week, we have our two combatants of Heat 1. We've got Andrew Grayson and Greg Shackleton. We've got my co-host, Mr. Paul Stirrett, and our guest this week, one of the best guys in the business right now, one of the most positive guys in the business. It's always great to have you on. Great to speak to you, Gordon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Hi, everyone.
We'll talk to Gordon all about his upcoming projects later on in the episode. But first, Gordon, you've got to help us analyze Deepwater Horizon. So, Andrew, the victor of Heat 1. Very happy to have won, I am sure. So you dispatched Greg and Mars Attacks, and we are now talking about Deepwater Horizon on this episode. So can you, first of all, tell the audience why this film?
I mean, before I get to that, I just want to say I'm really happy to be here with four guys that voted against me. Not that I'm bitter or anything, but, you know.
I'm going to show you bitter, don't you worry.
I mean, to quote another movie, like, why can't we all just get along? That was my thoughts. When it came to this. But no, the reason I picked Deepwater Horizon, when we got disaster movies, my automatic thought was like Independence Day, Twister, all that kind of stuff. And then I remembered that I'd seen Deepwater Horizon a few years ago and it was real. And I'm similar to you, Craig. You've said in the past, or you've tweeted saying that you're a sucker for based on a true story or based on real events. As soon as I see that, I'm engaged so much more. So I thought I would go just a different way where it's a real disaster. And it's a film I'm rather fond of, and a team that worked together, the director and Mark Wahlberg, have done a few films that I like, so that was the reason I picked Deepwater Horizon.
Awesome. And is that your favourite disaster movie, or do you have an actual favourite one?
I mean, Greg and me discussed, like, I think Independence Day is probably my favourite disaster movie. I also like 2012 and Day After Tomorrow, but yeah. It's not a bad film.
Not say 2012 to me.
Roland Emmerich.
I've got PTSD from that film.
Honestly.
That's not a bad film.
I had to sit through that. That was 1 year at school. That was a reward for good behaviour. We all got bunged into the assembly hall to watch that, and I genuinely wanted to do worse at school after watching that film to avoid that happening to me again.
Reward.
It was bloody awful. Anyway, so over to Greg. Greg, commiserations, Greg. I mean, as Andrew said, we all voted for you. We were all rooting for you, but it's the way it goes with these things. The public decided. So, Greg, was Mars Attacks your favourite disaster film? Or
No, not quite. I don't really do disaster films very well, and so I may have taken a few liberties with the topic and tried to push my ridiculous agenda. but no, I was on the fence. It was between this and Independence Day, and I thought, it's the first episode of the new year. January's been a little tense in places, so let's do something light and take our minds off it all. And then we got Mark Wahlberg exploding for 45.
I was going to say, I just went the opposite direction, be light and untense.
Well, I mean, I tried to set myself, is there a happy-go-lucky disaster movie out there? And Mars Attacks was as close as I got.
Yeah, yeah. And what are your first thoughts on Deepwater Horizon then?
Marky Mark, he's very engaging in this, but I'm still very bitter. I didn't mind this as much as I thought I would. But by the time it finished, I felt like this is like Titanic for dudes. Like, it's the same.
It's not a bad assessment, actually.
Yeah.
And I genuinely thought it was going to be a bit more trite than it was, and I was quite surprised at how sincere it was in places.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. In spite of a few things that I will get to later.
Exactly. Paul, Vindication. Vindication came for Paul at the end of last season in our Love Actually episode, because we discovered that actually Joseph Boone is the one who has seen the least amount of films in the top 100. So now I'm afraid we've got, by rights, we've got to call it a Boone Bonanza from now on. So from now on, it is going to be a Boone Bonanza for a first time viewing on the show. Paul, do you have a favourite disaster film, first of all? And what are your first thoughts on Deepwater Horizon?
Oh, I'm trying to think of disaster films that I actually like. Does Gremlins count? Is Gremlins a disaster film? They take over a town, wreck it? I don't know. I do like Independence Day. I feel like that's been tossed around quite a lot right now. I love Will Smith, and that's a great film. But I'll say Independence Day. But this was, I hate to immediately embarrass myself after my huge win at Love Actually, but this was a Boone Bonanza for me. But it was a good Boone Bonanza. You know, I was very much engaged from the start. So looking forward to chatting about it.
Awesome. Gordon, how about you? Do you have a favourite disaster movie, and what are your first thoughts on Deepwater Horizon?
Well, it's quite tricky, actually. What is the favourite disaster movie? Because I think the nature of the genre, they're kind of forgettable. I remember Scorsese recently described the Marvel Universe as a sort of roller coaster fun ride, contentiously, because he's from a different era of film. And I would say that I am obviously much older than you guys. I was born in 1970, so the 70s is my first experience of cinema. And in the 70s, it was quite a distinct genre disaster movie. There was The Poseidon Adventure, there was Airport 77, there was A Towering Inferno, and they're all quite a sort of real subject, but they were full of melodrama. The Hollywood escapism was part of it. So that was in my mind what a disaster movie was, but I can't say any of them are my favourite. So quickly fast forward to now, where we are just now, see the boundaries are changing. If we think about special effects, CGI, and we look at even Man of Steel, If we look at the fight between Superman and General Zod, they wipe out a city. And historically, that would have been a disaster movie. And if you look at the start of Batman v Superman, there's a flashback of Batman heroically driving through the collapsing buildings all around him. And that was a disaster movie. But I think, to be fair, that's pushing it a bit too much. It's a superhero film, okay? But, you know, it feels like a disaster movie. So with that in mind, on balance, I would say my favourite disaster film is the new Godzilla, which is topical at the moment.
Nice.
Because it feels like cities are getting wiped out. There's a real threat of impending doom and catastrophic disaster. And we've got the technology now to make it look real. Yes, there's a big monster in it. And historically, that was more of a sort of like sock puppet sort of level of a convincing reality, whereas now it's real. I don't know if you guys saw the clip of Kong versus Godzilla. Coming out. Just see Kong socking Godzilla is just superb. So
on an aircraft carrier.
Yes, even better. So sorry, very long-winded answer, Craig, but I would say my favourite disaster film is the new Godzilla.
Awesome.
And what do you think of this film, Deepwater Horizon?
Wow. I would say it's a disaster movie. I've seen it described as a docudrama also, because it's real. It feels very real. It's an excellent film, and I would say harrowing, and I feel quite traumatised having seen it. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's evoked those emotions. But yeah, we obviously chat further. But yeah, very good film.
Certainly not a bad thing. Yeah, for sure. With the type of film it is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think it's probably the emotions they're trying to provoke in you. And I think the film is successful in that. Yeah. I was struggling with the disaster movies. And I've posed the question myself, but I've been thinking away and I've been scrolling through Google and stuff. And I'm just thinking, I don't think I've seen many disaster movies at all. And not through like any kind of aversion to the genre. Like it's not like horrors where I'd like just avoid them. Like I don't have anything against them. But for some reason, I've just not seen that many of them. The one I came up on was Black Sea with Jude Law, where he tries a Scottish accent.
Oh yeah, I remember.
It's not bad. I think I watched it on a plane to LA once. So, but that's it. That's all I've got. Like any other film that I was kind of thinking of, I think I'd be pushing my luck as Greg was saying, with the genre and whether it actually would be a disaster movie or not. So yeah, I'll go with Black Sea, but yeah, very soft. Suggestion. Deepwater Horizon, though, for me, I think, as Andrew was saying, if you've been following us on Facebook and Twitter, I'm a sucker for a based on a true story. Like any kind of film like that, I'm in straight away. all you can do is lose me from there in these types of films. So I think the film is worthy of its 7.1 rating on IMDb. I mean, if I was to give this film a rating, that's what I would give it. We're about to talk about, we're going to go through the film and analyse it based on the formula of a disaster movie and how well the film hit it or did they miss it in the certain aspects of that. And I think for me, it's very much, sometimes it hits it very, very well. And there's bits of this film that I absolutely, absolutely loved and thought was done very well. And I think there's bits of the film that maybe missed the mark a little bit with the aspects of disaster movies that you'd want to see. So, yeah, I think 7.1 for me is a good rating. I think I really enjoyed the film, but there were bits in it that I thought could have been done a little bit better, for sure. And we'll talk about that as we kind of talk through the film. So, as mentioned, we have these formulas that we have for disaster movies. We've got the introduction, the backstory, getting to know the characters, from the filmmaking point of view, you want to start caring about the characters, getting the audience to care about the characters. Then you've got the foreshadowing, the trying to build the tension, trying to let the audience know that something is about to happen, something terrible is about to happen. Then, of course, you've got the actual event itself, the disaster, the carnage, the fight for survival. And then, of course, at the end, you've got the aftermath and what comes next, the fallout of this disaster, if you will. So we'll start with the introduction. We'll start with the setup, introduction to all the characters. So I'll come to Paul first. Paul, how well did you think the film executed that part of the film?
So introduction to the characters, I thought, was pretty good because I thought it set up three different takes on the film. So you've got Mark Wahlberg immediately waking up with his family, you know. He's in bed with his wife. He goes down to meet his daughter. And then there's that very, very subtle foreshadowing with the little bottle, like, and it's overflowing. So that set up straight away, you know, this is a family man. He's going off to work. They're away for, 21 days or something? And then... you know, so he's not going to be at home, and his whole thing is, I'm going to be coming back to see you. And even throughout the whole film, he is still FaceTiming or Zooming or whatever you want to call it these days. But he's calling back home to his wife, you know, so there's always that thing. His whole arc is he's getting home, at least in terms of this, you know, the film. With Gina Rodriguez, who I immediately put down as, oh, it's Ugly Betty. And then I realised, oh, no, it's not Ugly Betty. It's Jane the Virgin. I was like, damn it. I was so close. But straight away with her, I believe it's always a relationship with technology, because she does have a boyfriend at home, but our more thing is, you know, immediately she leaves and her car breaks down. She's like, what's wrong with this? You know, and even when they get to the rig, it's, you know, all they're talking about is the parts of the car. And then when finally it comes to it, you know, she's responsible for driving the oil rig. I had no idea it was a boat. I thought the struts went down into the ocean. I'm actually glad that it totally blew my mind. I thought that was how oil rigs work. So I learned something from this film.
Oil rigs.
I'm sure. I'm by no means an expert. But I thought Gina Rodriguez, her whole arc is learn to overcome this sort of technology problem or the problems, obstacles that would come in her way. And that's eventually what she does with the oil rig. And then finally with Kurt Russell, straight away he's chatting with BP and he's wearing a magenta tie, and that just pisses him right off because it's like, look, that's like the worst color. I don't want to see that color. I mean, you work for an oil company. Why would you show me that color of tie? It's infuriating. And anyway, he goes and they get on the helicopter. Immediately a bird hits the helicopter. Bad, bad sign. And then he's like, why is that boat there? Why is that boat? He's immediately picking up on like all kinds of bad wrongdoing. So his whole arc was the safety of the entire crew. And he's like, why is this happening? And then they're having all these, what I'm sure were important conversations with a chopper. So it's like, where? Yeah, who let what? Yeah, I'll go in. So his whole arc is definitely around how the safety of people around him, and to his credit, he does do everything right. He is very, you can see why people follow him. So I thought they introduced him really well, and then they obviously give him the safety award, and John Malkovich comes in and just ruins everyone's day. And that, just quickly about the sort of cast as an ensemble, when they get to the rig, one of the best things I thought this film does is show you how they all work together as a team and know each other and show their relationships. Because that for me anyway, that was the best part of this film, is just seeing how these people interact, because they obviously know each other very well. They're on the rig for weeks at a time, you know, and so they obviously will know each other very well. And I got that impression straight away from the film. So that was one of my favourite parts. And particularly I liked it when they were standing up to John Malkovich and he's like saying, "Oh, you're a bunch of scared cats." And he's like, no, even now, you know, you're like several executives above me, but I'm going to phone up Kurt Russell and ask if it's all right, because this just doesn't fly. I do not want to piss off Kurt Russell. That was my take on it. I thought that set up, there are sort of three different arcs within the same disaster quite well.
Awesome. Gordon, do you think the film did enough in that first, third of the movie to make you care about the characters?
I think it did. And you've got to remember, this is a real situation that really happened. So you could see that the actors were very respectful of the real people that they were portraying and the real tragedy that occurred. I think it worked really well. I have to say that Kate Hudson completely broke me. Her performance was so real. I was in bits because she was so real. And I think they did a really good job as actors with Mark Wahlberg and Kate Hudson and the daughter at the start to show that they're normal people. We have to remember America, we think of the movie industry and we think of the spectacular images we all see and we all love. But if you look at Los Angeles and New York, it's a 6-hour flight coast to coast. There's a lot of America in between. And the majority of Americans are blue collar workers. They're real people who go out and work bloody hard. And they portrayed that and they were reaching out to that. So it was slightly different in terms of historically disaster movies would be melodramas. This was real. It felt real. I loved Kurt Russell. Love Kurt Russell on everything from The Thing right through Escape from New York, everything. But he, to me, was like a regimental sergeant major. And the corporate guys were like the officers. And he's been there. He knows what he's doing. He's got the respect. And he has to work with these guys. There has to be a way. He's an experienced man. And he doesn't take any crap off them either. So I loved all these characters. The Wahlberg character was real. There's a 60-minute documentary. I don't know if you guys have seen it, about Deepwater Horizon. It's very accurate how they portrayed it. My only slight reservation, and this is a movie, it's not a documentary, was the BP bad guy, Malkovich, who was kind of a wee bit as well, you know, I really am a bad guy, you know. And he kind of slithered into Mark Wahlberg's workshop, and Wahlberg gave a very real sort of reaction to him. He wasn't having any of his crap. He was very sort of political. But I guess if you've only got, you know, a couple of hours to tell a story, you've got to make these clear. I don't think he overdid it at all, but I think he had to be the personification of corporate greed, and he certainly portrayed that. So yeah, in a short space of time, I think they did a really good job.
I think Gordon and Paul have kind of hit the nail on the head. I really agree with Paul in the sense that I think the cast as a whole really did show that communal kind of workspace, that they knew each other, they were friends with each other, they had in-jokes, they had bets, they had things like that. So that kind of made you care about these characters and what they were about to go through, what was inevitable to happen. I think the other thing as well that Gordon mentioned was you need to put a face to a quote-unquote villain. But then when Greg mentioned the Titanic thing, I agreed with that, because even if you get to the end where you see John Malkovich's character getting onto the boat, it's also quite reminiscent of what's his name? The bad guy, the guy that carries the weight onto the Titanic boat.
Mr.
Yeah, yes. I think the two guys have nailed it in the head in terms of the characters and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think everyone's pretty much covered it, right? All I can really add is I think it would have been super easy for them to go down that more melodramatic route of the big bad administrative type who just doesn't understand what it's like to be out there with the working man, and Marky Mark's there with a vest and a giant spanner and they're just working hard. And John Malkovich is there going, we need more stuff. And it's like, it's dangerous. Like, it could have been so easy to turn this into like a discount Armageddon. And then, I mean, granted, Malkovich is always very intense in everything that he does. But it's hard to, where do you draw that line between over-dramatic corporate greed and the news and the decisions that happened that legitimately led to people having to deal with all of this? So yeah. I'd give it a solid, like, 8 out of sure, whatever. You definitely have me considering whether or not this is too cartoony or not.
Interesting.
I think, which is one of the things I remembered with Kurt Russell that I really liked was that he actually orders a safety test. And I'm like, imagine a disaster film where they're actually testing for the thing that happens, you know, it's like, yeah. which is why it's obviously it hits more, because I'm sure they've done that in real life, is actually, you know, testing for this thing that could potentially destroy the whole rig. So it was just one of these things that I thought was like, you rarely ever see it. It's usually a bunch of people that, you know, it's almost like horror film logic, you know, just run out the house, you know, don't go upstairs, you know. It's like, oh, there's this giant dinosaur, we should, you know, fire a missile at it, it's asleep, you know, it's, you know, something like that. They're very, very dumb. But in this, it was like very straight to the point, you know, we know we're not taking any risks, we're testing for it, otherwise, you know, I don't care about your profit margins, we're going another 48 days without profit if we have to, John Malkovich.
Interesting. I disagree with everybody. I really do. Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm going to explain my position, because I do agree with what you've said to an extent, but I want to highlight potentially, I'm not telling what people think, by the way, and this is just my opinion, but
sounds like it.
Classic Craig. But no, I'm just meaning in terms of why do we feel for these characters? Why are we empathetic towards these characters? Now, listen, again, it's just my opinion, but I cared about the characters purely because I knew they were real people. So I cared about the characters because I knew this was a real disaster, that the actors were portraying real people who actually went through this horrible, horrible event. And I thought to myself while I was watching it, and also afterwards as well, if this movie was presented to me as a fictional screenplay, and I watched this film, would I have cared the same amount? And the answer for me was no.
Bastard. This was going to be my slam dunk point at the end of the show, but fine, let's do it. Yeah, I'm very much with you on that.
Okay, thanks Greg. So, no, yeah, that was just for me. It was just for me, like, what would I have cared if it was a completely fictional story based on what they did in this film, in the setup part of the film? And the answer is no. Personally, that's just my personal opinion. They didn't do enough for me to really make me care. And for me, this is the part of the film that kind of just slightly missed the mark. But you obviously all agree. That's totally fine. And that's what happens in these discussions. We disagree on these things sometimes.
I think that's a fair point, to be fair, Craig. But that's the beauty of the words coming up on the screen based on a true story. Because as soon as you see that, that's it. Immediately, you're like, right, I'm invested because this actually happened.
Yeah.
So you do get, essentially, it's a skipping of what you're saying. Like, you don't get maybe as much background that you need to care about these characters, but you essentially get to skip that level because of the based on true events. Yeah. Maybe.
For me, it was a question of like, how cynically do you want to analyze some of these scenes that they're giving you? So, like, it's like with the John Malkovich, like, how cartoonishly evil were BP when, well, it's British Petroleum. So like for instance, when the film opens and it's Marky Mark and what's her name again, Kate Hudson, and they're just sat in the bed and having a nice, very human conversation, I'm like, oh, this feels legitimately real, yada yada. And then 2 minutes later, like, oh, it's very important that we need to have We need to show that Marky Mark still fucks, even though he works on the oil rig. He's just like me and you. And I'm like, did we really need that, Mr. Director? Like, I get it. You have two very attractive actors here. Like, is this important? Like, for what you're trying to say and create here, especially when before the film's credits even roll, you have audio saying like based on true events, and you have actual audio from the actual interviews with the cast. And
maybe that was the first line in the audio that the guy says. He got up in the morning and he had
maybe it was.
Got the helicopter.
I think the director's very good throughout all of this at the nice little moments that just sort of like punctuate a scene here and there. So you've got like Marky Mark and his daughter and that whole scene explaining with Can, and that's great visualization. Sorry. And you've got like him at the very end when he's like, he can't take his shirt off and he's just sobbing on the floor of the hotel. Like, that's a great little like, oh shit, like that's legitimate moment. But they're just sort of sprinkled in throughout. And I came away from at the end, just the whole picture feeling a bit lacking. But I mean, that depends on what lands with you more than anything. Like for me, I've just got a note here that just says fucking jump scare birds. Like they didn't need to do that. It was cool when you see a bunch of birds getting hit by the oil. It shows you like the scale of the explosion and, oh shit, it's everything that could possibly going wrong is going wrong. But on the other hand, Mr. Director, you've just had a very loud noise come at my head in the middle of a very tense scene where I'm like, oh my God, all these men, what the hell is going to happen? Bird! And there's a bird! And it's just, it felt like it was a cinematic device that was beneath the moment and the severity of the tone and a biopic. Like imagine a jump scare in a in Schindler's List, for example. Like, it's like it feels cheap.
Very different movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But I mean, I would first like legitimately serious movie that came to my head.
Open the door and there's just a Nazi. They're like, yeah.
Because on the one hand, it has to be taken seriously and respectfully, but on the other hand, there's like cinematic language that has to be used that sort of just show escalation, tension, etc. And I think jump scares and like Marky Mark's ass, I didn't need that in this. Personal preference.
Yeah. So we're kind of dancing around the next point, which is the foreshadowing, which is in the film. Like, for example, the bird at the start hitting the helicopter and, you know, as Paul already brought up, which is the bit I really, really didn't like, was the daughter's science presentation, which is just like, this is what's going to happen. Honestly. So in terms of the foreshadowing, for me anyway, this was the weakest part of the film, I thought. It was very clobbering over the head, this is what's going to happen. When, again, as we've just been talking about, it's based on a true story. We know what's going to happen. So you didn't need all that very over exposition, I thought. It was very, very in your face. I mean, I was just waiting for like a neon sign on the wall saying, this is how many days we've been without an accident or something. I mean, I was just waiting for it. So, I mean, did anyone have a differing opinion on the exposition or were all kind of, or the foreshadowing? Did anyone have anything else to say on that?
I think the can of Coke was very much in your face kind of thing where it was. And that was what I loved about, not loved about that scene, but I found quite laughable, like the amount of juice in that can of Coke. It went on for a good solid 40 seconds before it kind of panned away. But again, as you said, it was pretty much in your face, like, this is what's coming up.
That being said, did anyone watch the trailer for this beforehand?
Yes.
Okay, that scene in the trailer is fucking awesome. Like, I was super into that. So, like, where do we want to throw our lot in here? Like, was this a cool throwaway gag for a trailer, or is it a good little visual of what is the horrors to come via a Coke can?
Exactly. I had the exact same thought, Greg. Exactly. I was thinking that when I watched the trailer, I was thinking, oh, that's actually a good way of showing like a bit of, you know, the tension and what's to come, and, you know, it gets you excited for the film. But in the actual film itself, it doesn't work. It's too much. You know, it's too in your face, as I said. Right. So shall we play our first game? Let's play our first
game.
Oh, go on.
Here we go. So we can't really have Paul on the show anymore. I mean, Paul, you've kind of put yourself into a corner here because every time you're on the show, we're going to want to play this game. So Paul, it's your tagline game, and it's made for disaster movies, let's face it. So over to Paul for Tagageddon.
It's Tagageddon. The game where I create my own taglines for disaster films, well, films in general, but this time, disaster films that you all know and love, and you have to guess which one is the real tagline. So, we'll start off with 2012.
Ooh.
Was it A, prepare for the worst year ever?
Sorry.
What? Was it B, we were warned? Or was it C, it was predicted, we didn't listen, now it's here?
You've not lost your touch, Paul. Honestly, mate, as the years pass, you've not lost your touch, mate. It's really good. Really good.
I'll go with worst year ever because it made me laugh. So hard.
I mean, it's either B or C. I thought this film was like really etched in my brain. I can kind of picture the poster based on that harrowing experience I had with it. But, oh, I'm going to go C. I don't know why. It's either B or C, but I'm going to go C.
Okay, C. Andrew?
I'll go with B, please.
B. Okay. And Gordon?
I do vaguely remember there was some kind of full historic link of prediction around this film. So I'm going to go for B as well.
B, okay. The correct answer was B. Congratulations, Andrew and Gordon. Very good, very good. Next up, we have got a film I had never heard of, but I liked the look of, so I went with it. Mega Fault.
That sounds like a sci-fi classic.
Mega Fault is a film about a giant earthquake. So that's all the backstory I'll give to you. So, is it A, the world is cracking and there's nowhere else to run? Is it B, a crack in the world has started, we have 24 hours to stop it? Or is it C, the biggest crack you ever did see?
I'm going to pray it's C.
Yeah, please.
Is this real? Is this for real?
Sure. These are, one of those are real.
Oh.
I'll go for A this time.
A.
Yeah.
Okay.
Greg?
I'm going with my heart. I'm going with C.
C. And Greg?
Oh, absolutely C.
C. And Gordon?
I'm just going to copy Andrew because it was my last time. Hey!
Oh, no, the pressure, Gordon, the pressure.
And the answer was B. No one got it this time. Very good. Okay.
Mate, these are really good, Paul, man. You're so good at this.
Thank you. Okay, next up, we've got Arachnophobia. Which, if you cannot tell, it's a film about a bunch of small spiders. It's not even giant spiders. It's actually just normal spiders take over a town. Very deadly, though. Very deadly. Okay. So, is it A, eight legs, two fangs, and an attitude? Is it B, incy wincy spiders are crawling all over town? Or is it C, this town is now their web?
Oh.
Oh, man.
The first one sounds like a spider dating ad.
Yeah. I'm going to go C.
Could you repeat A again, Paul?
A. Yeah, eight legs, two fangs, and an attitude.
And ready to mingle.
In your area.
I think I'm going to regret this, but I'm going to go C.
C.
Yeah.
Okay. Craig?
C still, yeah.
C. Okay. Gordon?
I'm going to go for A this time.
A.
Yeah.
And Greg, what were you again?
C.
C. Very good. Well, the answer is A. Eight legs, two fangs, and an attitude. That's two to Gordon.
That last one was really believable, though, Paul. That last one was really good.
But this is why Paul's a genius at this game, because he picks ones where the tagline seems fake and he puts a real one in that makes me doubt.
Yeah.
Honestly, I should look at trying to get into the industry this way. next up, we've got Godzilla. But there's a stick in the tail here. It's 1998.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Which is, funnily enough, one of the first films I think I saw in the cinema.
Oh, my. You poor thing.
In fact, I think it might be the first one I recall ever seeing. So, is it A, prehistoric monster meets NYC? Is it B, big lizard, big apple, big trouble? Or is it C, size does matter?
Oh, it's got to be. Surely. Oh, it's got to be C. It's got to be. Based on that film, and I know of that film, I'm going to say C. I totally were all wrong with that film, so I'm going to say C.
I'm going to go B.
B. Greg?
I think B.
B. Gordon?
Unfortunately, C. I remember the only good thing about that film is the Jamiroquai. Really good. They should have just left it there. But yeah, I'm going to go for C.
Very good. Gordon, you are an undisputed winner here, because it was C. Size does matter.
Oh, damn.
3 points to Gordon.
Awesome. Oh, well done, Gordon. Well done.
Did Jamiroquai have any idea that they were in a dinosaur movie? It's my question.
Going deeper underground.
I'm going.
Let's get back to Deepwater Horizon. So, here we go. Carnage hits. Disaster strikes. Fighting to survive. It's the main crux of this film. Of any disaster movie, this is what you're there to see. Andrew, how well do you think the film executed this part?
I think this is where it excelled. I think this is what Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg do best. The two other films that I've seen that they've done together was Lone Survivor and Patriot's Day. Mm-hmm. If you've not seen either of those films, I thoroughly recommend them, especially Lone Survivor, because the action scenes in them are fantastic. I'm going to start off with my bad point, and it's not about Deepwater Horizon. This is a general thing. Whenever I see a movie like this, where it's a disaster happening or somebody's being heroic and you get the American flag waving, it automatically takes me out of the movie, and I just go, fucking America, man. It's like we know you love your country. We all like it, but like, we don't need that big red, white and blue flag in every shot. But other than that, I think what they done really well was it was chaotic. You've seen so many shots jumping between the actual, like, inside the tubes, underneath the water, what's happening upstairs, how they're trying to fix it, who's coming to save them. So it had this energy that was building, and it kept you at the edge of your seat wanting to know what's going to happen next. When we got to the actual explosion parts, I thought the initial build-up of when Paul brought up they did the test, and they give you this, like, there's obviously something wrong. You're getting into the red. The pressure was too high. Let's do another test on the other line. And that's perfectly fine. And obviously, while we are seeing the bubbles coming up from the concrete, we know that's disaster. But then when you get the actual mud coming out of the pipe, it's this slow build and then it hits. And from that point on, there's no stopping. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And some of the shots that Peter Berg decided to use, I thought were fantastic. So there was a shot where you see the full eruption coming out and it spans the entire tower, so it just follows the tower and it follows the eruption, and you see the scale of how massive this explosion was. And a big thing for myself, I don't know about you guys, but one of my biggest fears is the ocean. Like, I think it's terrifying. So there's a shot after you see the explosion happen underwater, the water kind of ripples, and then they pan back and show you how derelict that they are out in the middle of nowhere. It's literally just the rig and a boat and it just shows you how vast and how far away from civilization they are. And I thought that really kind of added to the fact of, yes, they're on this rig and there's explosions, there's fire, there's all this kind of stuff going on. But even after that, even if you survive that, you've then got to compete with an abyss of ocean. You don't know what's in there. You don't know the temperature, things like that. And I think even the things as well, even if you take it to the lower stuff, so when you see Kurt Russell's character, Mr. Jimmy, in the shower, even him pulling out glass from his foot, showing that that's now going to be the struggle that he's got to go on. He's got gouges out his foot. He can't see. Even the scene as well where Mark Wahlberg are trying to save the guy that's got his leg trapped in under like a beam. It's intimate and you've got explosions happening in the background. But even that small bit of trying to push the guy's bone in to get it, it all added up. And yeah. I think it was very much of this slow build to start. We know something's about to go wrong. And as soon as it went wrong, that was it. It just got bigger and bigger. And there was like, you didn't see the escape. You didn't see this going well. And I think the fact that it was based on a true story was what resonated with me, because I'm going, you always like to think that if you were in a situation like that, you would do something brave. You would be a hero. You would try and save this. The scene where the guy climbed the crane, I was like, I was going, mate, please get down. I've seen this film before and I'm pretty certain that I knew that he was going to die, but I was like, please get down, man. Like this, like you see these guys do these feats and you're just like, you'd like to think you'd do them, but you don't know if you're in that actual situation what you would do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Peter Berg done the most. He really showed that these were real people. This was a real situation and it was a colossal disaster. It was a colossal fuck up and it was terrifying to watch.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree. For me, this is what made the film. 100%. I mean, I thought the film was very well shot throughout. I mean, I loved the way the film was shot, but specifically, I mean, the carnage that you really did. Now, I mean, in my notes, I stopped writing notes halfway through when shit hit the fan. When it all started happening, my pen went down. I think I wrote maybe like two notes after that, and it was just exclusively swear words like, shit, this is awful, fuck me, this is, oh my God, I couldn't imagine being in this situation. And that's when, you know, my heart started beating faster. I'm watching these people try and survive. I mean, I know it's based on a true story. I'm thinking, I actually don't know who lives and dies because I don't know enough about the actual news story. It was, you know, I was only about 17, 18 at the time. So, you know, I don't know enough about how many people died. And I was clueless. So, yeah, it provoked all the correct emotions that you would want in this part of a disaster movie. You really did feel for the characters. You wanted them to get out of there. Every time someone went, but like every time Mark Wahlberg went back, I was thinking, is he going to make it out this time, or is he going to die saving somebody? Because again, I didn't know if the Mike Williams guy made it out or not. The tension was brilliant, and yeah, I just absolutely loved it. And because you saw these people just making these split second decisions, Andrew's right. You're thinking to yourself, would I have done that? Would I have gone back and would I have gone up that crane? Would I have been like the guy on beside the lifeboat? When I need to get in the boat, I need to get in the boat. Yeah. You know, how would you react? And again, that's a very human reaction. And you think to yourself, yeah, what would I do in this situation? So yeah, totally, totally bang on. And the directing and the exposure were fantastic. Gordon, what did you think? What did you think about this part of the film?
I thought it was incredibly well done also. And I understand they built that rig. They were able to film on a rig.
I would love to see the behind the scenes of that stuff, because I thought some of the shots they were getting was incredible. I didn't realise that they'd done that, Gordon.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But I think there's also a sort of primal fear of an industrial space. And I can remember on a film set recently, talked to another actor who loves, we talked about the movie Alien, and he it reminded him of an oil rig, this creature, this Giger creature. And if you think of industry steel, cold steel, if you think of grease and grime, and metal and steam and fire and hot and cold, all these extremes, you realize we're just fleshy creatures that can't do very much ourselves. You know, we're so vulnerable. And for man to try and control nature, as they did in exploring for oil, way, way down deep in the ocean, and then nature's like, nope, and you're in the worst possible, you're in an industrial environment, it's kind of terrifying, because when that steel goes, you're so vulnerable. I also, the other point I thought was really good was how accurate it was that Mike Williams was the chief electrician on the rig, and he was in his workshop, and that big steel door did blow in and it did pin him down. So that's from his testament. So although it's a film, it wasn't a documentary, they have to make it engaging for an audience. They kept it very real and just try to sort of find your way out that we could relate to that, the sort of fear of that. So yeah, I thought for all these reasons, it was really well done.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the why it's so good, this part, it, as you're right, because it was real. They built it. It was real. It wasn't on a green screen. It wasn't. Yeah. It was practical. Those actors were standing on that set. It was built to be like an actual oil rig. You had Mike Williams on set advising, and all those little details, like just making a little bit more of an effort to get this right. It has that bigger impact for the audience because you're in it, you're there, yeah. you feel that it's actually happening. And I mean, there was at times where you do feel like you're actually there almost because it's so immersive, especially the scenes where Mark Wahlberg's like going through underneath all the stuff, going through the corridors, trying to find Mr. Jimmy, and you know those kind of scenes, like you feel that you're there with him. So it's just very, very well shot. Greg, Paul, anything to add on the carnage?
I think straight off from the bat, one thing I loved actually, shots wise, is that when the mud and then the oil subsequently starts pouring out at first, and like the room's just filling up, and they're like going, "What the hell?" You know, like, shut the tube, and you know, and then you've just got John Malkovich just covered in his own greed. And I just loved that. It was like a good, it's like that was one of the golden lines I wrote down. It's just, you know, and then for the rest of the film, he's walking around this thing, you know, the carnage, just like a lost puppy. You know, he's like he can't even take it in himself. What he's, and he knows he's to blame, but he just can't take it in. I actually really liked that part of it, as mustache twirly as he was, you know. But I'm quite similar. I never took any notes during all of this. I was just taking it all in. I think that's probably quite normal because, like I said, there was a lot of the character stuff at the start, and then it just basically it hits play on the disaster, and it just keeps going from there. So not too many notes here, but I just wanted to note that John Malky part.
Yeah. Greg, I understand that you had, I mean, you already kind of brought it up already, but you took more issue with the aftermath part of the film. So what specifically about that for you didn't work?
As a whole, the film's in two bits. First bit, build up. Second bit, watch it go. And bearing in mind traditional three-act structures and people's expectations and such, after 45 minutes of just watching everything go to hell and then have the ending for that just be an afterthought. Again, one of those lovely, great little moments, Marky Mark sobbing on the floor of his bathroom. Very sincere, very emotive. I felt a few things. Good little moment. And then it's just him leaving the hotel. You have a couple of meaningful looks at a few of the surviving cast. And then it ends. And I don't know whether it's because I wanted more or because after watching something like Chernobyl, which is mechanically very similar to how all this is sort of put together. Granted, it's a miniseries and it's got the luxury of time. It's longer. I kind of wanted to, if all the film had to show for portraying these very real events is, oh shit, wasn't these events terrible? I felt like more could have been done with that because otherwise, it just feels it's not even you're not even paying homage to it or you're paying any due respect. It's just here is what happened, and we're going to recreate that in as accurate and faithful a way as possible, and that's where we're going to leave it. We're not going to do anything else with it. We're not going to ask the difficult questions of like, well, what was it like after this? How do these people move on with their lives apart from a couple of lines of text just before the credits? Like, I mean, this is more, says more about my expectations and preferences here, but it left it feeling a little hollow. And I think when you're doing a recreation of true events like that, it's important to have that level of sincerity. But you have to offer something else alongside you. You can't just remind us all of that terrible thing that happened and then leave it at that.
Yeah, I totally see your point. I totally agree with what you're saying. For me, I suppose the thing is, it's what kind of film it is. Like what you're saying, that could be a film in itself. Yeah. Like you could do if you were to flip around like the whole thing and say we're going to, like Chernobyl, focus on the courtroom stuff, but flash back and forward between that and the carnage, and you see what happened. And then you get the context in the courtroom and what happened next, and you see where people's lives have ended up because of it. But that's a different film. You see that? So like, it's either that, or are we focusing on the disaster itself? And is it a disaster movie? Is it a docudrama? And that's the kind of question you've kind of got to ask yourself, I suppose. But yeah, I totally agree. Like, but the film is only I think comes
an hour 40.
Yeah, an hour 40. So I think you're right. Like, we maybe could have had maybe even like 5-10 minutes more, just a little bit more, just to kind of establish like maybe how they're getting on, or
like, you know, towards the end. Granted, the explosion's spectacular. I'm very invested. Guy popping a bone back into someone's leg, gruesome, effective. I'm feeling things. I'm sounding a little jaded right now. but our only real connection to any of these characters that they've spent half of their runtime to make us give a shit about is, will they survive? And nothing beyond that. And that that's Poseidon Adventure melodrama territory here. Like, oh, I hope so-and-so survives. Oh, I hope he dies. Oh, I hope when they go, it's going to be hilarious. Like, we're applying two different kinds of cinema here, and for the subject matter at hand, it's just falling a bit flat for me.
I totally agree with Greg's point, and I've got no argument against that. But the one thing I would say, because I know what I did the first time I seen it, this makes me want to go watch the documentary. This makes me want to Google stuff to see, right, what actually happened. Because I exactly as you say, Craig, it's you're either going to have this disaster film or you're going to have the courtroom case. So as Greg is saying, with the Chernobyl, you had the time over the series to do the event and what's happened after. So if I found out Netflix were doing a documentary series on this, it'd be on my watch list at 100%, because you want to see what happens. Everything that Greg says is completely correct. I want to know what the consequences were for the mistakes that were made. But it's just with this film that this is just kind of showing you the event, as you say.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, you know, Greg, with all that. There is one part that I did feel they did pay off quite well. You're right about the little moments thing. I think he does do that really well. And the particularly when they finally are all on the safety boat. And then they start calling out the roster.
Yeah.
And then he's like, is he here? You know, and just calling out names, shout your name if you're here. And then someone doesn't call back the name. And I thought just the silence that hung in the air as they're calling it out, they all then get on their knees and start praying. You know, it was quite a powerful moment.
So, I think they really had a lovely balance between those smaller moments and the scale of how the size of this explosion. Because it was even during the escape, Mark Wahlberg had a couple of lovely moments when they were trying to put the electricity back on, and he's making jokes about how the guy can't read, and then he actually finds out that he's got some sort of master's degree in architecture. And then the bit where just before he throws Jane the Virgin off, and he's like, look, I'm going to go. If you're not coming, then I'm not going. And it's wee tiny small moments while this disaster's going on in the background. And I thought it had a lovely balance. And then, as Greg said, that scene in the hotel when he was started crying, I welled up. I choked up, man. I thought it was so well acted. I think Mark Wahlberg is such an underrated actor.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Andrew. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm struggling to think of a film that I've not enjoyed him in. Like, I've seen quite a few Mark Wahlberg things, and yeah, I've never.
It's because he's got the Marky Mark tag.
Yeah,
that's it. Everything comes down to, oh, it's Marky Mark, but he's actually a really good actor.
Yeah. Max Payne.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that one.
I've not seen it.
You're not missing much, but
awesome, guys, awesome. So, should we play our second game? Now, this is a debut game. This is a brand new one for the Battle Royale season. So, each week, the person who won the heat, won the episode, they have got to pose to the rest of the panel 8 questions that they think will trip them up, that are going to be so tricky that you really have to be paying attention to the film to get them right. So this week, Andrew's got to give us 2 questions each. If we get it right, the panel gets a point. if we get it wrong. Andrew gets a point, and we'll see who comes out on top. So, Andrew, over to you for 8 questions to fool them all.
Sorry in advance.
8 questions to fill them all. So to make sure this is fair on you guys, that I'm not showing a bias, I'm going to ask you all to pick a number. I'll go from Craig first, then Gordon, then Paul. Greg will get 2 numbers and back Paul, Gordon, Craig. So Craig, could you give me your first number between 1 to 8?
2.
2. Gordon?
3. 3.
Paul?
4.
4. Making it pointless, guys. Greg? 2 numbers?
7 and 8.
Back to Paul.
You've
got 1, 5, and 6. Yep. Gordon, 1 or 5?
1.
1 and Craig, 5. Okay, Craig, you're up first. So the question is, what was the make of car that Andrea had?
Mustang.
Yes, correct. Well done.
Red one.
We then then go to Gordon. How long did the blowout last?
2 days.
87 days the blowout lasted. So that's 1 each.
Yeah. It's a visual medium, Gordon. I would never, ever do anything of the sort.
Paul, we'll now come to you, mate. How many days behind schedule were the team on the build?
Oh, was it?
You get this right, Paul. I know that.
48.
Ooh. Oh, it was 43.
I knew.
Oh,
fuck.
So close, mate. Do you know what the funny thing is? I see when Craig was talking about, oh, I was waiting on it, like how many days until something went wrong. I was like, oh, he's going to know that question. Because that was the part where you walked by and it was 43 days. We're now at Greg, number 7. After the disaster, when we see Mark Wahlberg walking into the hotel, he's wearing a jumper. What is the team on his jumper? I'll even just take the animal.
Thank you. Is it?
Come on, you've got this.
Is it the 1996 hit film Mars Attacks by Tim Burton?
It was close. It was close. The LSU Tigers.
That was my second choice.
Staying with Greg, who was the first name called out who didn't answer? He says it like 7 times. And it's the first name on the list at the end.
Is it star of the 1996 film Mars Attacks, Jay Fox?
No.
No?
His name is Jason Anderson.
Oh, Jason Andrews, yeah.
Okay, Paul, back to you, mate. Number 6. What is the runtime of Deep Water Horizon?
Okay.
The guys have gave you a big
hint. Literally said it.
Like in minutes or just... like an hour and something.
An hour and however many minutes. I'll give you that much of a clue. It's not 2 hours long.
An hour and 40.
What a podcast, 6? Paul.
46 minutes.
Do you know what, Paul? I'm gonna give you that. It's 1 hour and 47 minutes and 7 seconds. So I'll give you that. You were only an hour. We're now coming back to Gordon, number 3, number 1, sorry. There was an alarm system that had 3 settings. If you can give me 2 out of the 3, what was it for in detection of? What did the alarm detect? There was 3 different ones. If you can give me 2 out of the 3, you get the point.
Pressure? Gas? And?
Other.
No. That's it. Yeah, the other one.
I'll give you 0.5 point because it was fire, combustible gas, and toxic gas. I'll give you the point for gas. And last but not least, our leader, they performed a negative pressure test. It failed. What was the pressure?
On the first test
when it went over, what was the pressure on the dial?
Oh.
691.
1,395. 1,395. Yeah. Good question. That's a good question.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And that is us for 8 questions to fill them all. I do believe you got 3 points and I got 5.
How many did I get?
Mate, you got all the points. You got all the points. I love the dedication to your film. I respect that from the end, to be honest.
I made a point.
Well, that brings us nicely into our brand new segment, which is What Might Have Been. So, over to Greg. Now, Greg unfortunately lost the Heat 1 vote with Mars Attacks, but he's going to get the chance to explain to us, although not we voted for him, so not really us, but to Andrew and to everyone who voted for Andrew, why they made the wrong choice. Greg, why was Mars Attacks the correct film?
How long have I got?
Let me just check.
All right.
Tight five. Give me a tight five.
Tight five. All right. I'll try to minimize the swearing. I mean, where to begin? All-star cast of just, they got that person for this, really. Glenn Close, Pierce Brosnan, Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, Tom Jones. Tom Jones is in this. It's Tom Jones. It's fucking weird. Trying to keep it light. I mean, like, aside from a bunch of aliens wiping out the Capitol building, I thought this was going to be a nice, pleasant time where we could just kick back and not have to think about real people that were dead. But the only thing that I can honestly say that this film has of any other film that just invalidates most arguments is Sarah Jessica Parker's head stitched to a chihuahua. And if you can't see the validity, if you can't see the artistic license in that, then I can't reach you as a human being. And I'll yield the rest of my time. Sarah Jessica Parker's head stitched onto a chihuahua. And she got paid for this. Like, what are we... What's the real disaster here? Aside from Pierce Brosnan's floating head next to the spaceship. Like, I will yield the rest of my time.
I will take any
questions, though, if you have them.
when was the last time you guys, or have you watched this film recently? Does it hold up?
No, it's really, it's kind of stupid, and it's not even that funny anymore. But it's just such an odd little snapshot into like pre-Disney Tim Burton, before they got their hooks in him and he started churning out the same old shite over and over. It was just like, I'm doing spirals with stuff. Like, we know, Tim, we know. you've been drawing spirals 20 plus years now. Oh, the eyes are big in this one. Great. That's great, Tim. That's great. Can you go back to when you were just a lunatic with a budget? And
I've not seen the film. I watched the trailer for it, and I just thought to myself, oh yeah, Greg's definitely picked this film. This is definitely a Greg pick for sure. Gordon, you voted for Greg. You've seen the film. What do you like the film? Is it a film that you would have liked to have talked about?
It was a bit of a mischievous vote, because I think it's fun to talk about more, you know, controversial films. I think Deepwater Horizon is an amazing film. I love the film. I can remember seeing Mars Attacks in 1996 in the cinema.
Oh, wow.
I can remember I was an art student in Liverpool in 1989 when Batman came out, and it was big world news. It was front page of Rolling Stone magazine, because remember, before that, we just had this campy sock kapow comedy thing. And Tim Burton, who is this guy? So people threw money at Tim Burton, and he's done some amazing stuff. Yeah. So we're ready for Mars Attacks. And I cannot believe that I would sum up the film in one word as boring. It's a boring film. It's the last thing you would think. And it's 45 minutes before there's any action. And the fun is spotting the cast. Michael J. Fox is in as well. I mean, the cast is absolutely incredible. But it's a boring film. And, you know, Tim, if you're watching, love to work with you, but you know, it's not his best work. And I would say, watch if it's on, but it's not, maybe the trailer would be better. I don't know. It's a long film that not much happens.
Yeah, Tim stopped watching our show after we dissed Moulin Rouge. So, you know, he was out after that. He was a big fan of that film. So, you know, it's the way it goes. No.
It's odd. Like, I feel like you're watching it and it's like you're waiting for the setup for a joke that never happens. And it's just, and you're just like, they're in this? Like, what did they say? Like, what kind of dinner did they get invited to where they said yes to this? It's kind of just fascinating in spite of itself.
Yeah. Right then, we have absolutely smashed it, guys, as always. So before we move on to Gordon's interview section of the show, let's just do a quick fire round of buy, rent, or refund. So for those who have not seen the show before or first-time viewers on the show, buy, rent, or refund is how we say whether we would buy the film, which means that we really love the film and we would want to see it again and again and again. Refund means that, no, not for you, and I'm not going to recommend it to anybody. You know, stick it in the bin where it belongs. Or you have the middle option, which is rent, which means that you enjoyed the film and you'll recommend it to the people who you think would enjoy it, but you're not in any hurry to rewatch it anytime soon. So I'll kick us off with Gordon, our guest. Gordon, buy, rent, or refund on Deepwater Horizon?
I'm going to say rent. Nothing detrimental about the film. It's a brilliant film. It's an excellent film, but one viewing's enough. It's harrowing, it's real, and it's quite traumatic. So you get it from one viewing. So it doesn't really lend itself to repeat viewing. Great movie, but rent's enough for me.
Okay, Paul?
I'd be interested to know what the gross box office was for this film compared with the DVD sales or the downloads, because I am definitely rent for this film. Along the same vein of what Gordon's saying, you know, I liked the film. You know, I thought it was a really good film. Nothing really wrong with it, but except for some of the issues we've brought up. But not. I don't think it lends itself to repeat viewing. And I imagine films along the terms of World Trade Center and United 93 are probably along the same vein. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
yeah. Tragedy porn.
Yeah.
Greg, buy, rent, or refund?
I'll make it a firm rent. Everyone's been very... everyone has covered everything that I could possibly say on that, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah, I'm rent as well. Yeah, I really enjoyed the film. I'm happy that I watched it. This is a great part about the show, that I watched films that I probably wouldn't have actually watched without being the host of this. So yeah, very happy that I saw it. But rent, yeah, I'm not in any hurry to rewatch it for the same reason that Gordon said. It's a hard watch and maybe take a few years before you come back to it. And finally, our patron of the film, Andrew, buy, rent, or refund?
Rent as well. I think you guys have covered it precisely. It's a great film to watch. It's not something you're going to rush and watch again, but it's 100% a film I'm going to recommend to other people to watch if they haven't seen it.
Awesome. So we are 100% rent on this one. Let us know, though, you and the audience, at 100 Film Reviews on Facebook and Twitter, would you buy, rent, or refund Deepwater Horizon? So here we go. Gordon. Now, I mean, as you've been talking, I'm just going to be thinking I could listen to you talk for an hour. I mean, I just want to hear Gordon's life story. I mean, just like make a separate episode, just me and Gordon having a round table with a bunch of other people and just kind of talk about his life and how he came into acting. So that is my first question, Gordon. Just like, you came into acting, I think, quite late in life. So what kind of made you want to get into it?
It's a extraordinary sequence of events, and I would say the message from it is it's never too late to pursue your dreams. I would say do it. What you guys are doing is better than what I did. It's much better than what I did. You started much earlier, but it's never too late to do it. I had an epiphany. I had an extraordinary sequence of events. I've been a nurse for 25 years, frontline NHS, still working NHS throughout this pandemic. I set up in 2012, I had an extraordinary experience. I toured Scotland with the Dalai Lama. I did a social media. That led to a trip to New York.
No. Go back to the Dalai Lama. Just forgive me for that, please.
I think put a pin in it.
it's lots of crazy things. It would take, and I would blather on for ages. And you know, I'm grateful for the time you guys have given me this morning. But it's crazy stuff that happened. But I set up Scottish Style in the year of the referendum. Nothing to do with politics. We're all sick of that. It's to do with Scotland and Scottish culture. And what does it mean to be Scottish in the 21st century? Nobody's going to tell us. We'll tell you what it means. So people embraced it, and it blew up really quickly. Hosted events in New York, Los Angeles, Berlin, London, and it blew and blew and blew. And I find myself in 2017, There was a Facebook advert for a David versus Goliath movie coming to Scotland. So I went along and got signed up as a soldier. It was Outlaw King. And while on set, with all the gear on, I had an epiphany of emotional connection to the scene that we were in. And I thought, bloody hell, this is acting, this is real. I'm conveying something, I'm feeling something. I think being Scottish, the sort of train spotting line, it's shite being Scottish. I related to that in the 90s. I'm the same age as you, McGregor, and these guys. I actually asked them about that line. That's another story. But it's kind of inferiority thing. And I did not feel worthy to be an actor. I didn't think I'd be allowed to be an actor. But I thought, do you know what? I'm 47. Fuck it. I'm going to do it. So I enrolled for acting school, did courses. I met Craig. I spotted Craig earlier on. I knew that he was going to make it because it's more than just talent. It's drive. There's a lot more to acting than talent. We all see that. And then we did a diploma together, got signed by an agent, got various roles come up, and it started to happen. So it's I'm a wee older chubby guy. If I can do it, then you guys can do it, and other young people can do it. And think back to your 15-year-old self, and what message would you give? You know, you do not need the permission or approval of anyone to be your best self. You don't want to be stifled by anyone or anything. Get out there and do it. You've got one life and enjoy it. And I found very, very briefly, sorry, I'm banging on, Craig, but when I was a kid, I thrived in the realm of imagination. When I first stood on a film set, I stepped into that realm. I didn't realize the realm was a real place. We've all been on film sets. We've all been in productions. You're walking into that realm. It's real. And you can convey human emotion, human story, tell stories. And also I could take 25 years of nursing and those feelings and have a cathartic release and exploration of the human story. So, yeah. Yeah, that's roughly why I became an actor.
I fucking adore this man. I feel as if I could take on the fucking world listening to that.
We may need to start a separate podcast to get through all this.
Exactly. But honestly, Gordon, never apologize for banging on, Gordon, because honestly, as Andrew just said, like, I could listen to you talk for hours and hours and hours, and every time you speak to, especially people in the industry, we all get so G'd up with, like, yes, come on, we can do this, we can make it. And it's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, and as Gordon was saying, me and Gordon met on, we trained together. And actually, me and Gordon have a very, very similar, you know, kind of background in terms of, like, getting into acting. Like, I'm a teacher, and I had another career before all this, and I still technically am a teacher as well. And it was a case for me, I'd always wanted to be an actor since I was a kid, and it was just that case of, like, I'm just going to do it. And that's kind of been my thing. And I've been delighted to see Gordon just keeping on going and keeping on getting all these parts and stuff. It's been absolutely brilliant to watch, especially because he's such a nice guy. So speaking of which, Gordon, your projects, firstly, you know, you've got films Skinjacker and Dragon Knight coming up. Can you tell us what those projects are about?
Wow. Well, yeah. Right. Who's a fan of Alien or The Thing? I mean... Yes.
We all just put our hands up, Lewis.
Well, and also, I mean, if we think of Scotland, what's unique about Scotland? We think of the Isle of Skye. And my friends from California, when they come over here, I go over there. I love California. I love it. I love Americana. Love the big cars, big trucks, love the movies, of course. When they come here, what we have is enchantment. And the Isle of Skye is a global center of mythical enchantment. So take these ingredients, The Thing, Alien, and set it on the Isle of Skye. And there's a film called Skinjacker coming out. And I can't say very much about it at all. It's a sci-fi horror. It feels very real. I've read the script. I was completely hooked by the script. It feels like how real people would react in an extraordinary situation. But what a setting and what an influence around it. And we start shooting that in the next couple of months, but I'm definitely going to plug the crowdfunder for Skinjacker, which is coming out within the next couple of weeks. So again, anybody who's able to support or join in or be part of this journey, we'd be most grateful. And of course, I'll be sharing this around on social media just to get this machine moving. There's a lot of work going into pre-production, and we hope to start shooting in the next couple of months. But Skinjacker is going to be awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, and we'll definitely be promoting the crowdfunder on our page as well for you, for sure.
Thank you.
So, and
fantastic
also
fantastic title as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's great. And you've already got the merch on it. Yeah, the merch is there.
Great swag as well.
Very good.
Awesome swag.
And you've also in now, correct me if I'm getting the name wrong, Origins of Leoc, is that how you pronounce it?
That's how it's written. And yes, it's really, really important you brought that up. And it's nice because I think all of us with the written word, we've never actually heard the word said. Yeah. So that's how I would say it. It's actually Luich. Ah. So if you think of Lewis with a...
Yeah.
So, Origins of the Luich. Nice. And this is a wonderful Scottish production also. It's a mythical fantasy TV series pitch. So it's Fraser Cool's the director. He's created this amazing character called Effie Dwyer, who is an actress played by Innes Anderson, and she is Effie Dwyer. She is a badass hero, and Luich is Gaelic for warrior hero through the centuries, and it opens the doors to going through time and all these mythical creatures. And we did a crowdfunder, which did really, really well, and Fraser's about to pitch it to try and get a series. So the sizzle reel's nearly done, and he's going to take the sizzle reel, and he's done the CS Bible. He's worked really, really hard on this project. And we'll see what happens with Origins of Luich. But I think the best ideas, you don't have to pitch too hard. People get it. Scotland, history, badass warriors, we're in. So there's a really good reaction so far, so what we've released. So hopefully the pitch will be successful and we'll get TVCs. And hopefully that's more work for people in the industry in Scotland.
Yes. And that is the main thing. That is, we need to get more work up here for all these wonderful, talented people who work up here. And, you know, you can see how Northern Ireland are doing it and, you know, making the most of all that, you know, the industry that they're getting over there. So, and we can do that too, because Scotland is so beautiful, as you were saying, the landscape, Isle of Skye, it's a fantastic place. And the fact that, you know, we're not utilizing all this wonderful, you know, this country has to offer is just, and also the wonderful people here who really want to push on. And like there's people here like yourself, Gordon, you know, Gordon, you're not gonna go off to LA and, you know, and go off and go to Hollywood and stuff. I mean, like you're here, you're a Scottish guy, you've got a family here, you want to work up here, I imagine, and we should have the capacity to be able to stay here and work here and live here, you know. So projects like, you know, the ones you've been talking about are just, they're so important, and long may it continue, of course. So where can people keep up to date with all these things going on social media and stuff, and yourself as well? Where can we find more information about yourself and all these projects?
So if you're, I would say to all actors, get on social media. It's free and it's global, and we're all nosy buggers all around the world. So whether if you're in Hoyk or in Brooklyn, the first thing you do is go on your phone first thing in the morning. Have a wee nosy. We all do it. So actors, get on it. Get yourself in the forefront of people's minds. No matter how smart anyone is, there's only so much space in the forefront of your mind. So make sure you're that person that they think of when a role comes up. Get on social media. I run Scottsheet Style social media. Origins of the Luich is also on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And Skinjacker is on Twitter and Facebook. And Zoghog Productions, the studios, are also on Instagram. But yeah, Facebook works. It's not just, you know, roller skating squirrels and pictures of cats. There is some, when you filter through that, there is some good stuff there as well. And there's some industry stuff there also.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gorn. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. As always, and always a pleasure speaking to you. Thanks again to my wonderful contributors and co-hosts. We've got Paul, Andrew, Greg, thank you so much for being on the show. Andrew, again, congratulations. We will see you in the final. I'm sure you're looking forward to that. Yeah,
I hope I can count on all your votes this time.
I mean, it's a tricky one. Like, but obviously the films have not been, I mean, will they have been revealed by the time this comes out? They will have done. So
I'm going to make a bold statement. I think Gordon's going to vote for my film. just on what he spoke about today, I'm pretty certain.
Yes. Andrew has been hinting at what he has picked, and you'll find all that out very, very soon if you haven't already on social media.
Very easy to predict a rigged system, though. So.
I will have no involvement this time. And as I have said, I've defended myself. I love you, man.
Oh, it's such
one of my favourite films.
Oh, listen to him swear.
Don't worry. I've got all that backlogged up for the next one. Don't you worry. I'm going to be coming in pissing blood and vinegar. Don't you worry.
I love the fact that even on this episode, you've admitted that Mars Attack doesn't hold up and you liked my film, but you're still bitter.
Well, yeah, because I thought we'd have a much lighter conversation about it. I'm still getting over January. I don't know about you.
No, I had to support Team Broseph on I Love You Man. I had to. I just want to talk about it. It's just such an amazing film. So yeah, anyway, you can talk about my controversy of Paul on the next episode for sure. So we'll finish with a life lesson, but not a life lesson from the film, because we've got Gordon here. And Gordon is a man who has already talked about the biggest life lesson that I personally have taken in life as well. And it reminds me of a quote by George Eliot. It's never too late to be what you might have been. See you next time. I don't deny there's some strange evolutionary process going on, but mankind won't be destroyed. The fact that you and I are working here